The content you are about to hear represents the personal experiences and viewpoints of cardiac patients that are happy to share their stories. We are not medical professionals, and the information provided should not be construed as professional medical advice. If you are experiencing any medical symptoms, we strongly recommend that you seek the guidance from a qualified medical professional or a cardiac specialist. Your health and well-being are of utmost importance, and nothing in this podcast should replace personal professional medical advice. Remember, everyone's situation is unique, and seeking professional help is crucial for accurate diagnosis and treatment. Thank you for joining us. So this is episode one, part two of the Epsom Cardiac Podcast. This week, we will be continuing our theme of It Wasn't Indigestion with Mike and myself, Lee, discussing the events during our cardiac incidents. So without further ado, I will hand you over to Mike.
Now, I always thought, well, it'll be okay, as most of us have said. But I'd been out the night before, and I'd had some wonderful cardiac loving foods: samosa, sausage rolls, probably cheese, because it was someone's birthday and it was Christmas Eve, or it was the night before Christmas Eve. Got home, went to bed, thought, I'll get off to sleep. Fortunately, I did for a couple of hours. Woke up, chest pain. Thought, oh, damned indigestion. Hasn't cleared, hasn't gone. Right. Take some Rennies. Did that. Went back to bed. Partly sleeping. Very awkward in bed. Couldn't get comfortable. So I've had a drink of water, and it still didn't go. So it was an uneasy night. And by about 4 or 5 in the morning, I thought, I've had enough of this. So it was a case of wake the wife, say, look, I don't feel all that good. And by then, I'd had a feeling of sickness. So I'd been in the toilet, so I thought, oh, am I going to be sick? No, that eased off. Then I'm feeling hot and cold, starting to get a bit, as Fred said previously, a bit sweaty. So I thought, this isn't at all good. And I just didn't feel well. So she said, right, what are you going to do? Going to call an ambulance? And I said, no. I said, quick, it's early in the morning. Drive me, there won't be anybody about. Drive me to the hospital. So we went to Epsom, got there. I reckon it was about 6:30, 6:45, and there wasn't a soul about, apart from, the nurses in would. Were there Christmas Eve, they're dressed up for Christmas, tinsel and whatever else. Whisked straight through, put on a bed. They said, right, okay, well, we'll check. Strap me up with a machine with all the stickers all over your chest. And I thought, oh God, here we go. It's going to be fun getting these off. Little did I know that there was going to be about three times more different stickers put on me. I was covered in the blooming things. They said, no, it's not showing anything. And there's a nice doctor, short, stocky. I think he was Nigerian, but he sounded a bit gruff, but they said, no, he's all right, but he knows his stuff. So anyway, off he goes, gets one of them to give me a blood test. We'll know in a little while, he said. Off he went. It was about an hour before the test came back, and he said, yes, you're having a heart attack, so you're going upstairs. In the meantime, wife, very not knowledgeable on medical things, but she's not afraid to ask questions. So she's been doing the interrogation of the nurses and the doctors. And they said, oh, you'll go upstairs and we'll see how we sort you out. So I went up on a ward. Now, I don't know what they gave me, but most of the day I didn't have a clue what was going on. Bits and pieces I remember, and the rest of it's like someone just gave me snapshots through the day of things that had happened in a 12-hour period, I guess. So anyway, I'm upstairs, and I remember them saying to me, trying to decide on whether you're going to go to St George's or St Peter's. And I'm laying there, I just remember thinking, Oh, Christ, wherever I go, the traffic's going to be a bloody nightmare. It's lunchtime and it's Christmas Eve. Anyway, they came and said, right, we've got an ambulance. You're going to St. Peter's. So off we went, trundled round the M25 on the hard shoulder, which by then was the only access because the rest of it was jammed. Wife had gone home, and then I don't really remember. I went into a ward somewhere, and the next thing I know, they said to me, right, you're going down in a minute. And I ended up in the theatre. So it was all very quick. And laying there, big screen over the top of me, and I'm thinking, oh, I'll be able to watch this. So they saying what they were doing. See the veins, in goes the dye. Oh, that looks interesting. It's flowing round. And I'm trying to get a better view of this screen because it's at an angle. And the surgeon's gone, oh, don't worry about that. Well, don't worry about that. I'll move it out your way. And I'm thinking, no, I want to see it. But he moved it so I couldn't see it anymore. I didn't know they'd put three in, other than I heard them say, no, we better put another one in. So he put the first one in, put the second one in, and then the third. And they went in my wrist. And to be honest, I don't remember feeling anything. I don't know. I think they must have put the painkillers in or whatever. And I think I was probably the last one to be done that day because they sorted it all out. And they all disappeared straight out of the room and left the nurse in there to tidy up. And I started talking to, I do remember talking to her, and she said to me, oh, how are you? I said, I'm all right. I said, was it all gone all right? Is it all okay? Oh, it seems to have done. She said she was Portuguese, so but spoke very good English. And then she said to me, yeah, I had to take the blockage out, the clots and that. I said, oh. She said, yeah, biggest ones I've ever seen. And I thought, oh, for Christ's sake, you know, but that's the reality of it. And so they sorted me out. I must have been sedated in some way, because the next thing I remember is waking up in the ward. Wife and boys are there, and sort of trying to take everything in. Still not really. It hadn't. It never. And I don't think it ever sunk in what had happened to me and what had gone on and how bloody lucky I was. Because you look back and think, yeah, I was lucky, but it wasn't a traumatic lucky. I just don't understand in myself why I didn't feel more emotion about it. But that was the case. And I remember being there in the ward and then by the bedside, and they're going, you're talking a load of gobbledygook. What are you on about? They're asking me questions, and I don't know what I was saying back, but obviously it didn't make any sense to them. And a little while later, they said, "Look, we'll let you get off to sleep," and that was it. And the next day, they said, "Oh, you'll be going home later." And the Christmas Day, when the team came round, and I'm laying there thinking, "Oh, that's good. This is all very, very efficient and fast." And I thought, "Well, they wouldn't want me in there if they can get rid of me on Christmas Day, because you know, low numbers of staff and everything." And the guy in the next, I do remember speaking to the guy in the next bed, and he said, "Well, what's up with you? I said, they just said I've got some stents." So he said, "Oh," he said, "yeah, don't worry about that. I'm in and out. This is my third visit for stents here." And I thought, Christ. I think he was a builder. He just almost like he was gone in for an injection. The way he treated it, most odd. So that was that until I came out. But the only thing that was always at the back of my mind 6 months before I had the heart attack, I fell off a ladder doing the gutters of the house, and I was up on the side, and at those days we had a carport with a plastic roof, so prepared it all, put everything up, health and safety, ladders up. One thing I'd forgotten to do, I'd gone back up because I'd finished, left a paint pot up there, gone up to get it. The ladder slipped away, and I found out afterwards that when I'd forgotten to do one of the clamps up, so the ladder slid. As it slid, I came off the ladder through the plastic carport roof onto the concrete below. And the guy across the road was out the front and thought I killed myself. Jen was underneath sweeping the carport, didn't know what to bloody think. And I don't remember any of it. I remember being at the top of the ladder. I don't remember anything else. But of course, you crush all this, and it was crushed. Because I hit all down this side because it's pushed right in on my rib cage and everything else. And I did say afterwards, did it have any effect on me having the heart problem? And they said, no, that won't affect that. But I fractured something like seven, broke one and fractured seven ribs and broke my shoulder blade. And I thought, oh, well, you know best. But when I came out of hospital, I didn't have any pains. When I came out, because that was Christmas Day, didn't do anything, Boxing Day, oh yeah, right, felt all right. On the day after Boxing Day, because I'd inadvertently told someone who came round that you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to stay healthy, you've got to do lots of walking, and I wasn't getting any reaction. So I suppose painkillers must have been on painkillers. They said, "Oh, we go out for a walk tomorrow." So, okay. So I've gone off on a 5 mile bloody walk and come back, and then I thought after, well, I felt fine. And carried on like that, and it wasn't for quite a while before I looked at the sheet they give you, and it said, walk around the garden the first few days and then walk a bit. And I thought, oh my God, what I've wrecked everything that they've done. You just don't know, do you?
Mike, good account there. I mean, that was pretty succinct. I think
Come
we'll
on,
move
Lee.
on.
Let's hear
Yeah, we'll
yours
move on
now.
to mine. I just
Let's hear it.
I'm concerned now. I'm going to bore you to tears, right? So, 9 years on the 22nd of February, right? That's what it was. It was 9 years on the 22nd of February, and I remember the time. It was between, sorry, it was between 5 and 7 o'clock. I started to have these, I just a feeling of dread. I was lying in bed and I couldn't put my finger on it. It was the feeling of dread. I was feeling unwell and I couldn't understand why. Okay. So I put it down to food poisoning. We'd been out the night before. I had a cold. I had a virus as well, so I was feeling very cold all the time, like chilled to the bone. Nothing in the room could warm me up, sort of thing. Which is probably circulatory issues at the time. But we'd been to a hotel in London where we'd gone to watch a film in the basement in Soho. And normally we go out, we have a nice meal, all the wine, all the usual stuff. Yeah, right. So I couldn't face a drinking. I felt so cold. So I was at the other end of the restaurant and somebody'd opened the door and I was like, whoa, whoa, like chill to the bone. So didn't feel fantastic the night before. Gone to bed, drunk half a bottle of wine, gone to bed. And then I woke up at about 5 o'clock in the morning, having this sort of feeling of dread. And that sort of quickly turned into tightness in the chest. And then I had the death grip on the neck, you know, when it squeezes your neck. You know, I was like, oh God, what the hell is going on here? And then I was the dry yakking, so I sort of went across the toilet thinking like, oh, I'm going to be sick. So I was dry yakking. So I'd convinced myself it was food poisoning, yeah, but I couldn't get anything up, right? And then the hot and cold sweats, right? So you described them as and both of you were really polite in the way you described it. Was like, oh, I had a bit of a sweat on. I mean, literally, it felt like somebody'd thrown a bucket of water over me. I was like that wet. I was like, it was dripping off me. So I just went downstairs, fumbled around for a bunch of paracetamol. I mean, literally, chuck two paracetamol down. And a friend of mine told me that, I don't know if this is a wise thing, but he said, oh, your body can tolerate quite a number of paracetamol. So if you were struggling with pain, take some more, right? So, like within 5 minutes, I was back downstairs taking double, right? And I couldn't get rid of the pain in the chest. So, like, and I'm lying there in bed, and by now my wife and my daughter were downstairs watching TV, and my wife was actually making breakfast, right? And I said, oh, I don't feel well enough to get up. I don't feel well enough to get up. And I'm Googling symptoms, right? because I'd been to the doctor a couple of weeks before with chest pains, but I'd bought a rowing machine, right? And I'd been rowing like a madman trying to lose weight because I was about 86 kilos, 6 kilos or well, 6 kilos heavier than I am now, and I should be about 72 kilos, right? So, quite a lot overweight, and I'd had a few other issues which I'll come back to, but I was and I had this cough, this hacking cough, the cardio cough. Now I it's come to recognize as the cardio cough. But I thought I had bloody lung cancer, right? That's why I went to the doctors, because I had this bloody cough which wouldn't go away. Anyway, lying in bed, Googling the symptoms, and good old Google came up and said, "You're having a heart attack," right? So I'm going, so, and you know the pain down the left of hand, that was kicking, and I was going like, jeepers, creepers. It was really get, the arm was getting heavy, so heavy I felt obligated to hold it in the air. So right, I was walking around the house with my arm up in the air like this, thinking like, Christ, if I leave it, it's going to fall off, right? So I turned to my wife. I said, I don't feel very well. I'm gonna have to go to the hospital. And she was going, "Don't be silly. Let's have breakfast. And then if you don't feel too good, and you know that, yeah. But you know, I mean, it's not her fault, right? But you know that dark cloud, that cloud of doom, if you like, right? It was above my head, and I really felt that I needed to go to the hospital. So I managed to cajole my wife to take me to hospital, right? And she drove me down there. And when we walked in, I was so frustrated that I said to her, I said, "Look, drop me off at the entrance, like an ambulance sort of thing." And she said, No, I'm gonna park, I'm gonna park." So I said, "Look, I'm gonna get out." So literally she was trying to park the car. I jumped out to the car, Starsky and Hutch style, and sort of shuffled all the way into A&E with my arm in the air, right? And bless her, I said to the woman, she said, "Oh, can I help you?" I said, "I think I'm having a heart attack." And she said, "What's wrong with your arm?" I said, "Well, I said, it's hurting so much I can't leave it down, right?" And she said, "Well, hold on 2 seconds, sit down." She rang back to the guy and he said straight away, bring me forward. So they brought me forward. I described what had gone on. They put me on a bed and they inverted me, and then they ushered Claire and my daughter into the room. So I talked a doctor through, it was quite a young doctor, through the symptoms, and he said, "Well, look, we're gonna have to take some bloods, and only then we'll know for certain what to do." And obviously they were taking the troponin levels, so they inverted me slightly, give me a bit of morphine to calm me down, because obviously Google had heightened the sensitivities of like, oh, I could be having a heart attack. And then he came back to me and he confirmed. He said, "You're having a heart attack. We're gonna have to blue light you to St. George's." At that point, it was almost, in the films where I don't know, all your life sort of flashes by you a little bit. And I looked at my daughter and looked at my wife, and I'm going like, and I was looking at them to sort of say, "Help me." And then like, there's nothing they could do, right? And I'm saying, "I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do." And then he went from a position of help me to, "Oh Christ, who's going to look after you?" Because I was immediately thinking the worst, right? So then, as the morphine kicks in, you sort of calm down a little bit, and they got me in the ambulance. And it was Sunday. It was Sunday, and I thought, "Oh, we'll have a quick run in." But by that time, a bit like you, Mike, it'd gone to sort of lunchtime, and the A3 was rammed with all the commuters coming back to the back to London, and the guy was going up and down the ramps and stuff like that, and the sirens were flicking on and off. And I can remember sitting there, and the nurse or the ambulance person in the a paramedic in the ambulance with me, and I said, "Are we going to make it?" And she said, Yeah, we'll be fine, we'll be fine." And she could see I was getting more and more anxious, and she shouted to the, I can't remember what she shouted to the guy, and he just flipped the ambulance up on the pavement and just went around the traffic, right? So So, and as we got into the hospital, straight onto a trolley, they take you straight into the cath lab. That was an experience. They just chuck you onto the table. Like you said, they straight in at the wrist. They give you this purple dye, don't they? And and he had the gown on and stuff, and it was on the TV, and the guy, the only thing like the what there was I'm assuming he was a Chinese Asian doctor, and he was fantastic, mind. He was really calm talking to me. Could see I was absolutely wetting myself, but he was like a violinist. That's the only thing I could think of. He was like a violinist as he was putting the thing into my, oh, like, and I'm looking at it, and I'm looking, and you're looking at the screen, and you're going like, and you can see this thing working its way, and he's going like, oh, wrong way, and he's sort of bringing it back a little bit, and I was in awe, and he said, oh, you might feel a little bit of pain, and literally, I didn't feel it. I can't recognize it as pain. He removed the blockage, and all the pain went, all the pressure went from my chest. I could have literally jumped off the table and run home. I could have run home because I felt that good. And then he sort of said, oh, well, we're going to take you through to the recovery area. And then they said, oh, you might need the toilet after this dye. And literally, as soon as he said that, I peed myself, right? I just literally, and you're trying to put the cone thing on top of your watch it. Oh, I was just there was everywhere. It was just, it was, and she and the nurses. Oh, the nurse was lovely. She's gone. Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. This everything's gonna be fine. And I started cr at that point. That's when the emotion kicked in, and the tears just came and came and obviously I just the sense of relief and then. They took me on to the ward, and I was there for about 4 days, and they give me the bad news. They said, oh, you're gonna need a quadruple bypass. The left anterior where you'd had the heart attack, that was 75% blocked. Your right anterior, 65%. That's good because that's normal for a person of your age, 65% blocked. I'm going like, what do you mean normal? What do you mean normal? Right? She said, so you don't it shouldn't be blocked at all, right? She said, oh, and the bad news is the one around the back, I think it's called obtuse anterior. Excuse me. That's 95% blocked. Sort of like, of course, when they tell you that, you immediately think the worst, right? So I then was in panic mode, and then I think I was in the hospital for 2 or 3 days, which was the most incredible experience. Okay, so that concludes episode one, part two. Next up is Ed, who will provide an incredible account of the incident that he suffered while playing golf. So catch us next time for episode one, part three.